Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this Easter Sunday edition of our feature program. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. In a few moments, you can join me as I step back in time to listen to a couple of Easter messages from the two 20th century popes to be canonized by Pope Francis in St. Peter's Square at the same time next week. But first, I'd like to bring you Pope Francis's words this morning in St. Peter's Square, where he celebrated the Easter Sunday liturgy for 150,000 strong crowd. Happy Easter, he said in Italian.
Buona e santa Pasqua.
Following Holy Mass, he appeared at the central loggia of St. Peter's Basilica for the traditional Urbi and Orbi message, that's to the city and to the world. His voice echoed across the square, calling for an end to wars and conflicts the world over, as well as consolation to all those who suffer. His words were of hope, of trust in the power of love. Love is more powerful, he said. Love gives life. Love makes hope blossom in the wilderness.
L'amore fa fiorire la speranza del deserto.
With this joyful certainty in our hearts, today we turn to you, risen Lord. Help us to seek you and to find you, to realize that we have a Father and are not orphans, that we can love and adore you.
Con questa gioiosa certezza nel cuore, noi oggi ci rivolgiamo a te, Signore risorto.
Help us, he said, to overcome the scourge of hunger, aggravated by conflicts and by the immense wastefulness for which we are often responsible. Enable us to protect the vulnerable, especially children, women and the elderly, who are at times exploited and abandoned. Enable us to care for our brothers and sisters, struck by the Ebola epidemic in Guinea-Conakry, Sierra Leone and Liberia, and to care for those suffering from so many other diseases, which are also spread through neglect and our poverty. Comfort, he went on to say, all those who cannot celebrate this Easter with their loved ones, because they have been unjustly torn from their affections, like the many persons, priests and laity, who in various parts of the world have been kidnapped. Comfort, he said, those who've left their own lands to migrate to places offering hope for a better future and the possibility of living their lives in dignity and not infrequently of freely professing their faith. In a particular way, Pope Francis's thoughts turned to various geographical areas, beginning with Syria, that all those suffering the effects of the conflict, he said, can receive needed humanitarian aid and that neither side will again use deadly force, especially against a defenseless civil population, but instead boldly negotiate the peace long-awaited and long-overdue. His thoughts then turned to Iraq, where he asked comfort for the victims of violence. Staying in the Middle East, he called for sustained hopes raised by the resumption of negotiations between Israelis and Palestinians. Pope Francis then turned his thoughts to Africa. In a special way, he called for an end to the conflicts in the Central African Republic, a halt to the brutal terrorist attacks in parts of Nigeria, as well as a halt to the acts of violence in South Sudan. Turning to his own continent, he mentioned Venezuela, where he asked that hearts be turned to reconciliation and fraternal concord. By your resurrection, he said finally, which this year we celebrate together with the churches that follow the Julian calendar, we ask you to enlighten and inspire the initiatives that promote peace in Ukraine, so that all those involved with the support of the international community, in a spirit of unity and dialogue, chart a path for the country's future. Lord, he said, we pray to you for all the peoples of the earth, you who have conquered death. Grant us your life, grant us your peace.
Per tutti i popoli della terra ti preghiamo, Signore. Tu che hai vinto la morte, donaci la tua vita, donaci la tua pace.
Pope Francis then imparted his apostolic blessing to the city and to the world.
Et benedictio Dei omnipotentis, Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti, descenda super vos. Et maniat semper.
Amen.
And now we've listened to the words of Pope Francis this Easter Sunday. Time to join Jill Bevilacqua for her Easter Sunday edition of There's More in the Sunday Gospel Than Meets the Eye. But before we get to her reflections and readings, let's listen to the Gospel.
Early in the morning on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb. She saw that the stone had been moved away, so she ran off to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one Jesus loved, and told them, "The Lord has been taken from the tomb. We don't know where they have put him." At that, Peter and the other disciple started out on their way toward the tomb. They were running side by side, but then the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He did not enter, but bent down to peer in and saw the wrappings lying on the ground. Presently, Simon Peter came along behind him and entered the tomb. He observed the wrappings on the ground and saw the piece of cloth which had covered the head, not lying with the wrappings, but rolled up in a place by itself. Then the disciple who had arrived first at the tomb went in. He saw and believed. Remember, as yet, they did not understand the scripture that Jesus had to rise from the dead.
No one saw him rise. No one has been able to say what time it was. All we know is that when Mary Magdalene discovered the empty tomb, it was still dark. "Towards dawn," writes Matthew, "just as the sun was rising," we read in Mark. Presumably, as soon as it was light enough to see where they were going, the women set off with the spices and ointments they had prepared for the embalming of the body of their Lord. It had all been such a rush on that terrible Friday evening, with the Sabbath following, and it being the Passover too. The obligation to rest was one of the most binding, and began with the appearance of the first stars of the vigil. They'd all done what they could in the time. Joseph of Arimathea had offered the new tomb in his garden and provided a shroud of fine linen. Nicodemus, too, had turned up with a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 100 pounds weight. This would not have been for the embalming, but to scatter over the shroud and over the ledge where the body would be placed. And the women followed and saw the tomb and observed carefully how the body was laid. Apart from John, none of the apostles was present at the crucifixion, only the women. And it is the women who receive the first revelation of what has happened and the mission of informing the apostles. "Go quickly and tell his disciples, 'He has risen from the dead, and now he is going before you to Galilee. It is there you will see him.' But the women see him even sooner, for there, coming to meet them, was Jesus. And he confirms their mission. 'Go and tell my brothers that they must leave for Galilee. They will see me there.' Mary Magdalene, as we know, saw him even before the others. But first, she was to receive the shock of finding the body gone. And she ran straight to tell Peter and the other disciple, John the Evangelist, who never refers to himself by name in his gospel. A modern scholar has commented that the fact that the women are so prominent in all the gospel reports of the resurrection is because a precedent had been created. In Eastern countries at that time, women were not considered to be qualified witnesses, and so it is a historic moment, although at the time they were not believed. "This story of theirs seemed pure nonsense," writes Luke. And now we come to the delightful episode of the two apostles running to the tomb, and John, who's a lot younger than Peter, overtaking him and getting there first. Although John was writing in old age, he obviously remembered this detail with amusement and couldn't resist recording it, for our perennial enjoyment. I'm reminded of a novel by the present-day writer Alan Sillitoe, The Loneliness of the Long-Distance Runner, where the protagonist is a young man of John's age, 17, but a criminal in a borstal, a detention centre. But a rather unusual one, for he's sent off on long-distance runs in the hopes that this will turn him into an honest citizen. It doesn't do this, but it gets him thinking.
I tell myself I'm the first man ever to be dropped into the world, and as soon as I take that first flying leap out into the frosty grass of an early morning,
when even birds haven't the heart to whistle, I get to thinking, turning at lane or footpath corners without knowing I'm turning, leaping brooks without knowing they're there, and shouting good morning to the early cow milker without seeing him, forgetting that I'm running because I'm too busy thinking. Off like the wind along the cobbled footpath and rutted lane, smoother than the flat grass track on the field, and better for thinking, because it's not too smooth. Trot, 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 puff, 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 slap, slap, slap go my feet on the hard soil, swish, swish, swish as my arms and side catch the bare branches of a bush.
Our Borstal boy was running in the English countryside, while Peter and John were navigating the narrow streets of Old Jerusalem. What route did they take, I wonder, that first Easter morning, and what were they thinking? Mark writes that when Mary Magdalene went to tell the apostles she'd seen Jesus, they were mourning and in tears. If it was so early in the morning, one's tempted to think they were still asleep. But Peter and John are up like a shot and away. Where did they start from? Did they go along the Via Dolorosa? What were the images that sprang to their minds? Did a cock crow as they were going? And did Peter feel a pang of anguish and sorrow? And did John remember how the Lord had said he would rise again, and did he hope? Was that why he put on a spurt and went ahead, leaving Peter to struggle on alone? Was it perhaps the last bit, when they'd gone through the gate and left the sleeping city behind them?
I ran to a steady jog-trot rhythm, and soon it was so smooth that I forgot I was running, and I was hardly able to know that my legs were lifting and falling and my arms going in and out, and my lungs didn't seem to be working at all, and my heart stopped thumping.
Surely when he reached the tomb and, stooping to look in, saw the cloths on the ground, John's heart must have missed a beat. But he waited for Peter, who was not only his senior, but the one the master had chosen. Peter arrives at last, puffing and panting, and goes straight in without hesitation. John follows. And he saw and believed. What did he see? The linen cloths or winding sheets and the shroud, a large kerchief for the head. That was rolled up in a place by itself. But the cloths were lying on the ground, and as the body was no longer inside them, John concludes that it cannot have been taken away. 17th century metaphysical poet George Herbert has his own charming explanation.
Christ left his grave clothes that we might, when grief draws tears or blood, not want an handkerchief.
And now let's listen to Herbert's Easter Wings, in which the lines, as in the early editions, are printed vertically to represent the shape of wings on a page.
Lord, who createst man in wealth and store, though foolishly he lost the same, decaying more and more, till he became most poor. With thee, O, let me rise as larks harmoniously, and sing this day thy victories, then shall the fall further the flight in me. My tender age in sorrow did begin, and still with sicknesses and shame thou didst so punish sin, that I became most thin. With thee let me combine, and feel this day thy victory, for if I imp my wing on thine, affliction shall advance the flight in me.
Later centuries have seen a falling off of belief and a distortion of values. In March 1944, the Protestant theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote to a friend from prison.
Speaking of Easter, do we not attach more importance nowadays to the act of dying than to death itself? We're much more concerned with getting over the act of dying than with being victorious over death. Socrates mastered the art of dying. Christ overcame death. There's a real difference between the two things. The one is within human capacity, the other implies resurrection. We need not the art of dying, but the resurrection of Christ to invigorate and cleanse the world today. What a tremendous difference it would make if a few people really believed and acted upon that. To live in the light of the resurrection. That is the meaning of Easter.
The agnostic mood of the 19th century is reflected in this poem by A.E. Housman, and yet the writer hopes.
If in that Syrian garden, ages slain, you sleep, and know not you are dead in vain, nor even in dreams behold how dark and bright descends in smoke and fire by day and night the hate you died to quench and could but fan, sleep well, and see no morning, son of man. But if the grave rent and the stone rolled by, at the right hand of majesty on high you sit, and sitting so remember yet your tears, your agony and bloody sweat, your cross and passion, and the life you gave, bow hither out of heaven, and see and save.
In distinctly joyful contrast is the entry made in his journal for Easter Sunday 1948 by the Trappist monk Thomas Merton, celebrated writer on spirituality.
All the apple trees came out in blossom Good Friday. It rained and got colder, but today is very bright, with a pure, pure sky. The willow is full of green. Things are all in bud. On these big feasts, you come out on top of a plateau in the spiritual life to get a new view of everything, especially Easter. Easter is like what it will be entering eternity when you suddenly, peacefully, clearly recognize all your mistakes as well as all that you did well. Everything falls into place.
Two years later, again on Easter Sunday, Merton recorded.
The grace of Easter is a great silence, an immense tranquility, and a clean taste in your soul. It's the taste of heaven, but not the heaven of some wild exaltation. The Easter vision is not riot and drunkenness of spirit, but a discovery of order above all order, a discovery of God and of all things in Him. This is a wine without intoxication, a joy that has no poison hidden in it. It's life without death.
When Merton's journal was published in 1953, he gave it the title The Sign of Jonas and explained why.
The sign Jesus promised to the generation that did not understand him was the sign of Jonas the prophet, that is, the sign of his own resurrection. The life of every monk, every priest, every Christian is signed with the sign of Jonas, because we all live by the power of Christ's resurrection.
And our thanks there go to Jill Bevilacqua for bringing us this Easter Sunday edition of there's more in the Sunday Gospel than meets the eye. Meanwhile, as we know, in a week's time on Divine Mercy Sunday, Pope Francis is set to canonize two 20th century popes. The first, John Paul II, only 9 years since his death, and the second, John the 23rd, 50 years after his death. Without giving too much away, in a few moments you'll be able to hear both these Roman pontiffs wishing you Happy Easter in English, but also the words of these Roman pontiffs relating to Easter. Let's begin then with Blessed John Paul II's Easter message on one occasion.
Christ's Passover, from death to risen life, is the central mystery of salvation.
Pope John Paul II there speaking about the central mystery of salvation. It was April 1993, and his words in English were for the benefit of the English-speaking pilgrims gathered around him from across the world in the Paul VI Audience Hall in the heart of the Vatican. A weekly appointment he dearly loved, during which he always imparted a catechesis. On that occasion, being Eastertide, he naturally spoke of the resurrection of Christ, of that message of the angel to the holy women.
The message of the angel to the holy women at the tomb, that Jesus, whom they were seeking, had risen, has echoed down the centuries, from the first Easter morning until our own day.
Echoing down the centuries, then, is that message of Christ's Passover, from death to risen life, the focal point of the liturgical year and the fulcrum of Christian life. A message relayed to us by the evangelizers in their New Testament accounts. One providing us with an authentic witness of what occurred in those days. Shedding light on the historical aspect of what remains a reality of supernatural order.
The proclamation of Christ's death and resurrection is the beginning of all authentic discipleship, as well as the source of the Church's mission to preach the good news of God's plan of salvation to all mankind.
An important characteristic of the appearances of the risen Christ was precisely his entrusting to the apostles of the mission of evangelizing the world. As he told the disciples in the upper room on the evening of the first Easter day, "As the Father has sent me, even so I send you." And they realized that the Paschal mystery committed each of them, Peter in a special way, to building a new era of history, an era that began on Easter morning.
Beloved brothers and sisters, may your faith in the risen Lord increase your joy and peace in this Easter season. May you find renewed enthusiasm to share the good news with all, especially the suffering, the needy, the oppressed. May Mary, the mother of the risen Christ, sustain your hope and strengthen you to serve Christ in your neighbor ever more faithfully. Happy Easter.
Well, now we've heard John Paul II wishing us a happy Easter in English, why not listen to John the 23rd doing the same? It was April 1960. However, a word of warning, this much-loved Pope, often referred to as Good Pope John, never quite mastered English.
Happy unto all Easter!
When he pronounced these words, it was the 17th of April of that year, during his Easter message to the city and to the world, the so-called Urbi and Orbi message. And moments earlier, he told the faithful in St. Peter's Square in a style that was still formal in manner, yet at the same time personal in content. Here we are. From Easter onwards, we can renew our loyal commitment to honour the responsibilities that life lays before us in terms of relations of a religious, civil and social order. O Jesus, who vanquished death and sin, Pope John went on to say, we all belong to you and wish to go on belonging to you, every one of us together with our families and what is most dear and precious to us all.
Noi ti rinnoviamo, O Gesù, l'impegno della nostra fedeltà nel fare onore alle responsabilità che la nostra vita ci impone nei rapporti di ordine religioso, civile e sociale.
We are forever yours, whether we be in the ardor of youth, in the wisdom of maturity, or experiencing the inevitable discouragement and the sacrifices that come with old age. And then Pope John said, O Jesus, give us your blessing and impart your peace throughout the world, as you did when you appeared on Easter morning.
E donaci la tua benedizione, come facesti riapparendo la prima volta nel mattino di Pasqua. Nolite timere, ego sum, pax vobis, pax et benedictio, per singulos dies in eterno. Et benedictio Dei, omnipotentis, patris, et fili, et spiritus sancti, descendat super vos, et maneat semper.
And that brings me up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and I'd like to wish you all a very happy and peaceful Easter. Don't forget, I won't be back again at this same time tomorrow, but I will be back again at this same time next week, so be sure to join me then. You've been listening to the English programme of Vatican Radio. Laudetur Jesus Christus.